Welcome to Your Life Reset, a Virta Health podcast series. I'm your host, Teresa Link, and in this series, we'll hear from people on their Virta journey, the wins, failures, moments of adversity, and moments of joy they're experiencing along the way. So sit back, relax, and listen as we unwrap the truly human experience of Virta. Hey there, listeners. It's Teresa Link, and welcome to another episode of Your Life Reset. Joining me today is Virta clinician Shane Anderson. From the halls of Duke to the front lines of diabetes reversal, he's embraced a more holistic approach that ultimately led him to Virta. We'll explore what it really means to guide people through confusing health advice, especially when it comes to food. And yes, we're going there. Red meat, cancer, and the truth behind those scary headlines. We're going to unpack all of it, from research to ribeyes. Plus, rapid-fire fun, picky eater hacks, and Shane's hot take on winter grilling. This is an episode that blends science, storytelling, and steak. Let's dig in. Well, Shane, I'm so excited that you're here today. Thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Yeah, happy to be with you. This is my favorite podcast. I don't know if you know that.
You did tell me that. That's quite an honor.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, it's all about the guests. So if I have great guests, then it's a great show. So thanks.
Well, excited to talk with you.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk with you as well. Let's start with your personal journey. So what inspired you to shift toward a more holistic patient-centered approach? And then what led that to bring you here?
Oh, yeah. Great question. So in my early adult life, I guess like a lot of Gen Xers, I sort of collected college degrees. I went to school and got a degree in psychology. I went to seminary and learned things like ancient Greek and fun stuff like that. And then in my 20s, I sort of pieced together like a teaching and part-time church work sort of career. And along that time, I started thinking, okay, you're a grown-up. What do you want to really do with yourself? And eventually, I felt really drawn into healthcare and joined the nursing program at Duke in North Carolina and just really had a rich experience there. And a lot of my movement into healthcare and into nursing was just really personal. I was very out of shape. I was unwell. And my dad had struggled a lot with diabetes and obesity and the complications of it. In his 40s, went blind, and he's still with us, a wonderful dad, but he's disabled from the side effects of macrovascular side effects of diabetes. And at Duke, I had some really influential professors, just people that like poured into my life, and I could really partner with people versus sort of healthcare being about taking over people's lives, instead just respecting and understanding and walking alongside. And I became a nurse practitioner, you know, in time, and then I was in a busy family med clinic for a hospital system and tried to stay true to all these things I really cared about, you know, in life. You know, I ended up at Virta by the end of the story, which isn't over yet, but you know, it really, for me, what I became committed to was a process of lifelong learning myself about human wellness, and then learning with my patients about that, and then helping them become students of their own well-being, and developing even my own like holistic framework by which I thought of health problems or goals. And I think honestly, a huge part of that is what we're talking about today. It's helping people navigate a lot of confusing and conflicting information. You know, if there's an expertise I need to bring to the table, it's partly that. It's helping interpret what they're hearing, you know, and experiencing, and helping point them again toward their own well-being.
Absolutely. Well, you have quite the pedigree, lots of talents that you can, lots of stuff. Yeah. That you can bring multi-talented. And I'm sure that,
some people call that distracted, Teresa. They call it distracted.
Well, you call it, one person calls it distracted. Another person calls it, you know, it took them 7 years in college. But, you know, it brings you to where you are today, right? How can clinicians like you really help cut through the noise for so many people that are confused by all of these different messages they're just bombarded with on a daily basis, specifically around, you know, health?
Yeah, I it it may come as a shock to some of our listeners, or they've already, you know, kind of switched to this opinion, but many clinicians know very little about human well-being and about how to get people healthy. It's not what they're educated in, and it's not their focus. And in fact, a lot of the ways we even help people are based on things we've just memorized and been told are true, and we just repeat them over and over. Well, the danger is when that's not true. It doesn't actually help people. And so many of the things we do in healthcare harm people, and we learn about it later, you know, as we study and we break through the noise that's in healthcare. And so clinicians have this, you know, struggle also. And I think, you know, part of it philosophically is we need to be learners. We need to always be learners, always be curious, but also really respectful of human experience. You know, there was this pivotal moment in my career where she was a EMS worker who I had worked with in the trauma center, and she had gained a lot of weight. She had an A1C of 10. She said, "I remember that guy, Shane. He's in practice now. I'll go see him. He'll help me." And she showed up in my office, and she was just distraught, super depressed about where she was at in health. And I did my best. And I thought of myself, again, as this holistic practitioner and this coach and this compassionate person. And she didn't show up for follow-up, and she didn't answer my messages. And 6 months later, I was in a busy clinic day, and my medical assistant handed me a rooming sheet for a same-day visit that had just come in, and it was her. And when I went in the room, all of her weight was lost. She handed me LabCorp labs with some guy named Jeff Stanley's name on them. And she said, "Some guy." So Jay Stan was there with us. And she handed me that, and she said, I said, "What happened? Like, I've been so worried about you. You look great. How are you? These labs are crazy." Like, they were normal. Everything was normal. And she said, "Oh, I found this thing called Virta, and I just learned how to eat to reverse my diabetes with nutrition." And my brain exploded. I was like,
yeah.
Okay, well, tell me what they're about. And so then I started, like, over time, integrating well-formulated ketogenic eating into my practice. And then eventually this guy, you know, that I had had as a nurse practitioner student, you know, I'd been his preceptor, Brian Mack, who's one of our continuity clinicians. Brian calls me and says, "Shane, you're already doing this. Why are you not working for Virta? Like, you need to come to your family, you know?" And then that was 4 years ago. And I think I did 10,000 intakes for Virta, you know, interviews for our patients. And so I've just come to really love and respect what we do. And then about, you know, a year and a half or so ago, I came onto our continuity clinician team. But I think, you know, like, that story of just sort of the human impact, whether it was other clinicians or this person I was taking care of, I think in all of these things, we can't lose people. And so when we're getting science studies and we're getting information from professional organizations, or we're learning things clinically, we never forget that in front of us is a human being with a real experience that we also need to learn from and grow with. And it's just that footing has been so great for me and changed my life. And so it's made, you know, and then being part of Virta, where, like, I think our clinicians really want to translate knowledge into practice for patients, helping them, you know, just turn their life around, you know?
Absolutely. And the cool thing too is we don't have all of the answers, right? And so a lot of times it's learning as we go. And sure, we've got protocols, and sure, we have, you know, lots of similar patients who have had a lot of the same type of journey, and we can learn from that. We can learn from those patterns, but still then you've got someone that's just going to kind of throw you off, and you have to learn from that and have an open mind. So I love that story. Everybody has their own kind of unique story, and the fact that yours involved so many names that I, you know, already know and respect is just really cool. So thanks for telling
me. Yeah, one of the first things I did was watch Sarah Hallberg's TED Talk.
Let's tackle this headline grabber, shall we? So there was a 2015 article, you know, about 10 years ago. It's making the rounds again, though, and it's scaring people again, that red meat causes cancer. So is this solid science, or, you know, is it just a scare tactic?
Yeah, great question. Isn't it amazing how these things come back around, whether they deserve to or not? And that's one of the lessons as we talk through the science around beef and cancer, or red meat, and processed meat and cancer. You know, there's an organization called the IARC. It's the International Organization for Researching Cancer, and it's part of the World Health Organization cluster of work done internationally to help people. They threw this report out there that puts processed meat, so meat from mammals of any type that has been gone through any process, including something as benign as like smoking or adding salt, all the way down to like extruded bologna product that like who knows what's in it. They put this report out about eating processed meat at above, you know, like a couple ounces a day raises your risk of colon cancer by 18% based on studies that don't prove that. And that's the way it was really reported. And again, they put it in the same category as like, you know, talking about something like tobacco. They said processed meat causes cancer, tobacco causes cancer. And so we're looking at something like tobacco, where they say tobacco is a carcinogen. Well, it raises your risk of cancer by 2,000%. Whereas in their funny math, which we'll get to later, but I mean, these aren't on the same universe. But of course, the medical media picks this up. And that gets to your question, is this a scare tactic or solid science? And I think when we're talking about the way the relative risk was reported, it's a scare tactic. And I'm not claiming that on behalf of the people who did their initial studies. I'm just saying the way it gets rolled out is be scared.
Yes,
you know, cigarettes cause cancer. Beef does too. Like that's the way it sort of played out.
Yeah, that is very scary. And I recall something similar happened with red meat and dementia study that was released not terribly long ago. I brought in Dr. Sotokoff to talk about that. And he went through and, you know, all the headlines and thought it's so easy to just grab one thing from a headline or from a study and just completely extrapolate that into something that's terrifying. And but again, that's what, you know, the headlines get people reading, you know, sell the news, right?
And maybe I can bring it down a little more simply that like we're talking about what was claimed in this study is an 18% relative risk increase. So that means if you're in your lifetime, your normal risk of getting colon cancer is, and it is, it's about like 4.3 people out of 100 will get colon cancer in their lifetime. What this study claims, which again, I'm not a huge fan of the logic to get here, but what it claimed was that you would have an 18% increase in the risk. So most people do the math and they're thinking, oh, now I have a 20 something percent risk. Right?
Yeah.
Because 18 percentage points, right? No, that's not what's being said. What's being said is you go from 4.3 people out of 100 getting colon cancer. And if you eat a lot of processed meat, not whole red meat, they claim, they said then 5.1 people out of 100 get colon cancer. And so we're talking about relative risk change that they're claiming in that study, which again, I think is quite a claim. When you listen to the critics of that study, they make a point that 800 studies were reviewed in a matter of a couple of days by a group of 22 people. And out of these 800 studies, all but 14 were just cut and left on the table. And we have no description of why they weren't looked at. The 14 studies that were included, all of them were observational. None of them were rigorous scientific studies. They were observational studies. And then the craziest part of this is over half of those studies that were used showed no cause to think meat caused any kind of cancer in people. And then of the percentage that did have some signal that maybe that should be looked at, none of them, except one, were statistically valid. None. And the one that was statistically valid was... And are you up for this? This is a crazy story. So
I'm up for it.
Okay.
I'm up for it.
The one that was statistically valid was the well-known Loma Linda study that was done among a religious population of Seventh-day Adventists who, as a matter of religion, the vast majority of them practice vegetarian eating. And so what they found was when you looked at this group, the people in this group that ate meat had this higher rate of colon cancer. But what this is like a very classic example of what we call the healthy user bias. So you have a religious community of lovely people, and they are. You have this religious community of lovely people, and the people who follow the tenets of the religion, like, you know, don't get in bar fights, you know, don't use street drugs, try to limit.
You just know. Basic so, things, right, you know, being like, a good person.
Yeah, so it's the healthy user, right? It's the person who listens to advice and does it. They don't eat meat. And so they're not drinkers. They're not smokers. They're not partying on the weekends. Like, I'm not, you know, degrading anyone. I'm just saying this is a different group of humans than the mainstream population. And this, in this group, if you ate meat, you had this higher rate of colon cancer, but you also had a higher rate of smoking, drinking. And we call this the unhealthy user bias. The rebellious are the ones eating meat. So you have to extrapolate from that, that this is a pretty biased study, right? You would want to look at other populations where red meat is not a sign of overall personality or lifestyle.
But right.
Red meat is just part of, you know, the diet. And so this is the study, you know, you get to the end of 800 studies and you have this one like highly biased study.
That's the one that captures the headlines, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Eat meat and you get cancer. And so people who avoid red meat for health reasons, they do other healthy things. And you're going to see this in all the studies. Like, you know, if you're told it's healthy not to eat red meat, you probably are a person who also knows it's healthy to exercise. It's healthy not to smoke. It's healthy to get sleep. It's healthy to, you know, keep your relationships intact. It's healthy to get some sunshine. Like, you're doing healthy things that will affect the outcomes of these studies.
Super quick science break. You mentioned confounders. What are those? And how do those kind of specifically potentially mess up research results?
You're asking someone to recall what they eat and then saying, have you ever had cancer of the colon? You know, you just, and Teresa, you've worked with a lot of patients as I have. How good are patients at recalling what they eat when they didn't write it down while they were doing it?
Well, they can't usually tell me what they had for breakfast, you know, let alone why they walked into a room. Oh, sure. 20 years ago, I
was eating lots of blueberries,
broccoli X number of times a week, or I drank X number of glasses of wine.
Yeah.
You can't remember that stuff.
Yeah, you can't. There's no way. And the other thing, Teresa, is like, this is observational. It's like saying, you know, I sell lots of ice cream on days I wear sunglasses, and us saying sunglasses cause ice cream sales. And then you go to Walmart and all the cashiers have sunglasses on inside of the building. Mm-hmm. You'd go like, this makes no sense, right? Like, that's not the connection. But observational studies can, in our mind, imply a causative connection, like eating meat equals, you know? And so they're just weak for what they're being used for in the media or in these sound bites or to recommend changes, you know, in diet. And this is a way of describing those things that muddy the water, right? You know, the smoking, the unhealthy lifestyle features that may accompany people who have been told it's unhealthy to eat red meat, and they just add red meat to their cigarettes, to their french fries, to their, you know, sodas, sugary sodas, because they don't care about that sort of stuff, right? And then
right,
it confounds the data.
I mean, really, we could take any of those variables and say it causes cancer, right? Why? I mean, so red meat could be guilty by association, as could, you could say, you know, partying on the weekends or you know, dating someone who's a smoker. You know, all of these things could be the cause, but we are honing in on red meat in this particular situation. And in a lot of studies as well.
What they say is that the evidence against red meat, or the evidence saying red meat or processed meat, which are two really different things, but again, exists kind of on a spectrum.
Right. Super quick. Let's assume our listeners don't really know the difference? What would be some red meats? What would be some processed meats? And potentially where there could be a little bit of difference, at least in terms of quality.
Yeah. So with when we're talking about red meat, we're talking about any meat that comes from a mammal. And so that we think particularly of beef. And we also should think, though, of pork and things like lamb or veal or mutton or rabbit, which not many people eat in America. But even, you know, I went to Sardinia and had a donkey steak once, you know.
Wow.
So, yeah. So that's a red meat because it comes from a mammal. And it's called red because of the heme iron content. You know, it has more heme iron, way more than any other food, the kind that you can absorb and use. So that's what's red meat. Processed meat, the definition they're using is really any red meat that's gone through a process. So it can be as benign as smoke, you know, dad's out in the backyard smoking his brisket, all the way down to, like I said, these meat gel products that you, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm from this, I lived in the South, and I'll tell you, you can go to the deli and there were blocks of things that did not resemble meat to me that were called meat. So I think that's, you know, a pretty wide range of products that people are thinking of.
Yeah. And then you have the ones in between that are kind of confusing too. Let's say you've got, you know, you've got fresh pork with spices and seasonings, and you put that through a meat grinder and you wrap it up, and all of a sudden you've got a bratwurst, but it's processed, right? It's a processed meat because it went through a meat grinder, but it came from fresh pork, spices.
No sugar, no weird flavorings, no weird colorings. But that's considered in these studies the same thing as the neon pink hot dog, you know, sold at the stand. And it's not the same food. We know it's not the same food. Just look at the back at all the ingredients. It's not the same thing.
Yeah.
But they're both called processed meat, right?
Those neon pink hot dogs are very popular in at Nebraska football. Probably any other, you know, they got the red, you know, hot dogs, and they are not natural at all.
You know, I'm over here in Iowa. I mean, you know, we Midwest people should stick together, but, you know, some of these sports rivalries are going to make it tough for us, Teresa.
Oh, I know. I know. I don't know. You. So what's you're in Iowa. Are you an Iowa State fan or a University of Iowa fan?
You know what? I'm not talking about it publicly.
Okay. All right, fine.
I just want all my patients to love me. Do you know what I mean?
That's fair.
Like,
that's fair.
I feel like it's a bad, Hawkeyes.
Oh, so you just revealed yourself.
Well, I think, you know, pink hot dogs are a great example. But another thing to think about with this is when people are saying that they eat processed meat and red meat, are they eating it? Are they the people that are eating vegetables and drinking water? Or are they the people drinking a Coca-Cola and getting a large fry?
Right. Right. So you've got potentially benefits of the red meat, but thrown in with all of these other things, all this other garbage that kind of negates the high quality of that you might get from the red meat itself.
Right.
Okay. Well, that sounds very confusing. We've been talking about beef. I think you're a fan. I'm a fan. Let's specifically talk about beef. So yes, it gets a bad rap oftentimes. But what are we kind of overlooking when it comes to some of those health benefits of beef?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot that we could say. So people often overlook how essential what beef contains is for human life. So it's nearly a perfect food. And round it out with other things, the nutrients that are in beef, the proteins, the fats, many nutrients that are basically only found in animal products are there. And I want to hone in on some benefits. Iron deficiency, for example, is a huge problem among children. And it's actually, I mean, it's huge. It's like, I think it's like 33%, one in three of our children in America are iron deficient.
Oh,
and
wow.
Iron, yeah, and it affects brain development, it affects emotional stability, it affects hormone health later in life. There's many things that are tied to childhood lack of iron. Beef should, and red meats in general, should be considered one of our first co-foods with breast milk. And we should be thinking about the benefits of this food for human health. You know, and again, a lot of this comes back to just some very simple things like heme iron, vitamin B12, creatine, the complete proteins in beef. These are essential for human growth and for brain development and for many aspects of health. But I mentioned women. I think, you know, as a guy who's done a lot of primary care, it's rare for me to find someone who comes to me and says, a female who comes to me and says, I'm depressed, I have body aches, I have migraines, I have fatigue, I have all dry skin, my hair breaks. You know, they have like all these what we call kind of like somatic confounding symptoms that don't point to one particular disease. But I'll tell you, almost every time I check their ferritin level, it's far below optimal and it's often almost non-existent.
What's a ferritin level?
So ferritin is a marker in blood that correlates to iron storage in the body.
Okay.
And many clinicians in the past would wait until you're completely anemic. In other words, your body doesn't even have enough iron to make blood cells appropriately. And then they'd check and say, oh, let's look at your iron profile. But now we know that, like, you know, rates of depression, anxiety, fibromyalgia, migraines, all these things are deeply associated with iron levels. It's very important for human well-being. You know, we think of all the macho guys going carnivore, right? Like, but it's our gals that need to be thinking about the role red meat could have in their health. If we've got a second, gut health is a big part of this too.
We've got a second. Yeah.
You know, Teresa, how often did you have patients or do you have patients that'll say, you know, I have this like terribly irritated stomach. You know what I really need to eat is banana, rice, applesauce, and toast.
Yeah. Horribly, a lot. Unfortunately, many, many more when I used to work in a GI clinic because I gave that handout to pretty much everybody.
Yeah,
and well, here's a handout. Then you won't have any problems anymore. Also, try increasing your fiber. If that doesn't work, then you probably need to decrease it. And if that doesn't work, there's nothing we can do, really. So I recall that quite a bit, and I have a lot of remorse for those years.
Yeah, me too.
But
I mean,
even
I'm
now,
learning still. But what I'm saying is, you know, I think nutritionally, metabolically, you look across the domains of health, you really have a tough time beating red meat.
So you talked about B12, iron. Lots of other nutrients, how basically beef is like this perfect food. But it's also delicious. Something I hear you talk about all the time, satiety.
Right.
And it's just, oh, you love it. I love it. It's delicious.
Mean, this is part of the whole thing. I mean, like I could drill in a little more on nutrients like creatine for like mental health and, muscle recovery, collagen to keep your skin good and your joints good and tendons. You know, I mean, there's a lot of nutritional things, but you know, a big part of human wellness is joy. I mean, it is literally just having joy in your life, having moments of happiness. And there is nothing better than beef. It's literally delicious.
Yeah. Beef is my, my self-care.
Yeah.
Right. It's you said it's joyful. So yes, my self-care is after a long day, a juicy cheeseburger without the bun. It's funny. Sometimes I'll go to restaurants and I'll order a cheeseburger and usually a side salad or like a side of some other vegetable. So before I spiral into, a cheeseburger fantasy here, let's talk more about health, in this case, public health. So tell us what happens to public health when our overall rate of red meat declines, when we start to see that red meat disappearing from our plates over decades.
Well, we mentioned beef really packs a nutritional punch. I mean, you get zinc, you get vitamin B12, you're going to get 7 times more heme iron in a serving of beef than you are going to get in chicken. We've been saying, oh, white, you know, only white meat. And I am not against chicken. I love chicken. But what I'm saying is, like, when we have an epidemic of iron deficiency, you know, that's a pretty, that's a missing part of people's diets. They need to attend to this. You get 7 times more in beef. You know, when I was a kid, everyone that wanted to be healthy was told, if you're going to eat meat, only eat white meat, right?
Right.
And avoid things like egg yolks. You know, thankfully, the FDA told us this year we're allowed to call eggs healthy again. Since the 70s, red meat consumption has dropped almost 30% in the United States. And yet, during that time, we have seen an epidemic of obesity, diabetes, depression, mental health problems, chronic fatigue, colon cancer is much worse now, mental health disorders, cancers of all sorts. So if beef was the problem and we're down 30%, shouldn't we see an improvement in human health as Americans have followed this advice to get rid of red meat? And instead, what we see is really an epidemic of some pretty serious problems.
Can we talk about mental health specifically? You brought that one up, and I know that's not a hot topic, but it's a lot of people are really, really struggling with this. How does red meat support the brain?
Yeah. And, you know, this correlation of the rise of mental health problems or these other things with beef decrease isn't proving causation, but it should cause us to pause and maybe ask the questions. That's what correlational data should do, or observational data should do, is ask some questions. And, you know, I know you had her on the podcast, I think, before, Dr. Georgia Ead on Your Life Reset.
Not yet.
Okay.
But so Georgia, if you're watching, I'm coming after you.
Okay. I've heard a lot of podcasts with her on it. Dr. Georgia Ead is someone who our listeners need to get acquainted with. And I think we should have her on Your Life Reset, Teresa, don't you?
I do.
Yeah. I think we got to get her on here. So her chapter in her book called Change Your Diet, Change Your Mind, her chapter on meat was highly influential in my thinking. And she is a Harvard-trained psychiatrist. She specializes in nutritional psychiatry, in helping people with mental health concerns to turn those concerns around using nutrition. And she specifically ends up highlighting the role that animal-based nutrition has in mental well-being. And it's not just down around these essential nutrients, which are essential for mental well-being, okay? So iron, vitamin B12, zinc, choline, omega-3 fatty acids, the things we've been talking about. It's also about their bioavailability in those foods. So when you eat animal-based products like eggs or red meat, your body can absorb those things and actually use them in ways that it isn't the same taking a supplement or trying to fortify other foods. And what she shows is that diets that are low in those nutrients, particularly plant-based diets, okay, and I don't say that to step on toes here, but I just say it to say what she's been learning as she's been trying to help people around these topics, that these can impair the synthesis of chemicals that are very important to brain health. So serotonin, dopamine, GABA, and they can lead, that sort of eating can lead to anxiety, depression, fatigue, brain fog, which makes mental illness far worse. So even where it's not the cause of a person's problems, these nutritional things certainly add to the problem. Beyond this, though, and we know this from our children, I mean, glucose and insulin instability is a mood-altering reality. You know, grandma was right. You give those kids a bunch of sugar, they're going to be bouncing off the walls, and then they're going to crash and be crying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've been doing this to a generations now of people and to ourselves, and wondering why our mental well-being has declined. And I know that again is hypothetical in some ways, and rigorous studies could maybe help us understand this better. But the other anecdotal side that makes me tell people they should try this and think about it is what we see at Virta and what I see in practice. Many people have significant emotional health improvements when they're firmly in ketosis and live there.
Yeah. And I love what you said. What I remember, it may not be something that causes this per se, but it's worth opening up the conversation and asking questions and staying curious.
Right. Because we don't put the same skepticism around something like going on a walk every day. We know that that's dramatically beneficial for mental health, right? We don't have to say, well, we have to prove that it, you know. No, we just know that it helps many people who are suffering in these ways to have regular physical activity. Well, I would say it's the same way with increasing the amount of animal-based protein compared to the typical standard American diet, especially in the place of sugar and starches.
I promised our audience some rapid-fire fun. So here we go. Are you ready
for just some rapid? I'm so up for this.
Wow, all right, here we go. Fun. Oh, we know you love beef. So what's your favorite cut?
Ribeye, for sure. Ribeye. The fattiness, just all so yummy. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Quick go-to meal after a long day that includes beef, of course.
I'm going to go with my wife Georgie's egg roll in a bowl. So you take some beef, you add some five spice, sugar, you know, salt, pepper, and then so just scrambly burger, and then cabbage and ginger, and you serve it in a big bowl.
Yeah. I'm gonna try it. I'll try it next week. I've got beef lined up for every night this week. I've got some pork as well. All right, moving on. Best budget-friendly way to get high-quality meat.
Buy a cow from a farmer or a meat locker, and you know, in Nebraska and Iowa, that's readily accessible. But it's a great way to do it. Drop it in the deep freezer, right?
And you can share it. You can share it with friends.
That's right.
Yeah, we bought a quarter cow one time, and we shared it with some friends. Had cuts of beef for forever. Yeah, it was great. Most underrated nutrient in beef. We talked about a lot of those nutrients. What's the most underrated one?
Oh, you know, I think iron. I sound like a beating a drum, but we need it. So, yeah, heme iron.
All right, moving on. You know, my daughter, she's 5. She's like any 5-year-old, fairly picky with her food. So what's a great way to kind of address this picky eating when you're hesitant about red meat? Not just children, but, you know, really all of us.
Hamburger. I mean, honestly, like, who doesn't love hamburger?
Yeah, my daughter will have taco beef just about any night of the week. So we always have a big thing of ground beef and make sure that we've got some that we can just kind of cut right off for her or defrost. And then we make, I want taco beef, which I love.
And a great way to prep in advance, right? Like you can cook a large amount. You can put them in sealable bags in the fridge, pull it out to warm up for meals, you know.
She just eats it right out of the bowl. She just wants a bowl of taco beef and cheese. And I'm like,
tell her Shane is super proud of her.
Oh, I will. Great. Yeah. I will. Yeah. And also, you know, you can't forget, like, you've got the shredded cheese and just, you know, you got to eat it out of the bag while you're making it. You know, that's just
fantastic.
The way you got to do it.
Yeah. What a life we get.
Yeah, exactly. Now, beef liver. Yes or no?
Oh, for it. Nature's vitamin. Yeah. Yeah.
You're for it. Do you like it?
Oh, I love it. Oh, yeah. Great. Even better is rabbit liver. I know that sounds, but it's the best. It's soft. It's delicious. It's mild. It's great.
I haven't gone there yet. Not just with rabbit liver.
So I got a plan for you, Teresa. It's Grandma Jody, my mom. It's her recipe. You just take a little chunk of the liver, you wrap it in bacon with a little water chestnut, and you put some, like, you could do soy sauce on it, or you could do like a low carb barbecue sauce, and you bake it in the oven.
What is your favorite way to season or prepare, let's say, ground beef in particular?
Salt, pepper, garlic salt.
Okay.
Double the salt, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's it. Straightforward.
Cumin? Any cumin in there?
Oh,
that's my favorite.
We do it all. Yeah, we do it all. We're about spicing it up.
Last one. Some crazy people grill in the winter. Are you one of them?
You know, why not? Good for your character. It's sort of like is this like a Virta-friendly ice plunge? You know, like, why not? Let's do it.
Yeah. So do you do that regularly, or do you just sort of say, I'm up for it?
Yeah, I'm up for it. I'm not gonna lie. Probably don't do it a whole lot, but yeah, I think it sounds like a good idea. Maybe I should take that on this next winter.
Yeah. Tell me how it goes.
I'll send pictures.
Okay. You'll just have your grill will just be frosted over
yeah,
that you're trying to
covered in my parka.
Like just, Yeah. Sounds good. All right. We've covered a huge amount of science. We've had some laughs. Let's put it all together, shall we? So when it actually comes to cancer risk and nutrition, what pieces of advice can actually help people?
So I'd go back to sort of my roots in all of this discussion. Learn how traditional ways of eating, how whole foods have been a benefit to everyone everywhere. And also think about the nutrients our society needs. And are we sending the right message? You know, this high carb, high sugar diet that we've invented is really not, has not been good for human health and well-being. And when it comes to the question of things like cancer risk, let's just focus on the bigger picture and the whole patterns. Where are we going to get real bang for our buck in trying to avoid increased cancer risk? And what can we do to get ourselves healthy and well so that, God forbid, if we were to get a cancer, we're able to outperform it and do well. And I think, you know, as I'm thinking about our chat, I just loved it, but I would hope if people walk away from this and they feel less afraid, more clear-headed about the role of red meats in their life and more a student of their own well-being and learning what works well for them, then I'm just super thrilled. That's why we're here.
People will also walk away with a PhD in beef studies if they made it to the end. Yes. So thank you so much, Shane, for joining us today. I can't wait to have you back on to help us unravel the next headline. So thank you so much again. I hope you have a great rest of your summer.
Lots of fun. Thanks. Enjoyed it. You too.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. And if you'd like to regain control of your metabolic health and feel like yourself again, check us out at virta.com. That's VIRTA.com. Your Life Reset is for informational purposes only and shouldn't be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Contact your provider if you suspect you have a medical problem. I'll chat with you all again soon. Until then, stay inspired, my friends.